Tabletopped will start after the following messages.
Hey, cool people. Do you like mead, magic, and long walks in the icy tundra? Ever wonder what your sled dogs are thinking about? Why not cap off your night with a frosty tabletop adventure?
You will come to love my beef, Cliff.
You're in the common room. Go to your room.
Excuse us.
Excuse me, Dog Cliff. What's your favorite food?
Sausages, probably.
No, you look like a strong lot, but I've got more friends than you.
Carnelian's like shortened on the ground and he's standing
you
on top of the table.
You know what you have to do.
You know what you have to do.
Carnelian stabs him in the butt.
What did he say?
He likes sausages.
Oh my god, me too.
Right, I'll sit beside Warden and start carving his rod.
Oh my god. Sveta, my rod's nearing completion by the looks of things.
Unless the four of you can stop them.
Well, grab your Ugg boots and join Reflex Save every Wednesday on your favorite podcast platform.
Ever cautious but often boisterous, Shade venturing forth with you today on a journey through gaming and mental health. I'm joined today by two wonderful guides on this journey, Dr. Kelly Dunlap, a clinical psychologist and community director of Take This, a foundation dedicated to destigmatizing mental health challenges and increasing mental health resources in the games community. Also joining us is longtime friend of the podcast and AFK event manager of Take This, Liz Favorito. Welcome to you both.
Hello, hey. Thanks for having us.
Oh, well, thank you so much.
So happy to be back.
So glad to have you back, Liz. Well, I'm very excited to have both of you here today because, you know, mental health and gaming has had quite the spotlight on it for some time now. And I'm always eager to kind of dive into this subject and hear more about the various work being done in this. So if you could, broadly speaking, tell me a little bit more about Take This as a whole.
Sure. So Take This was founded originally in 2013. And so we just celebrated our 10-year. We're going on 11 years now, which is very exciting for a mental health nonprofit in the gaming space. You want to talk about niche? Yeah. The organization has really grown from, you know, originally it being more about, you know, sharing blogs and game reviews and kind of like more, you know, of the time, like Friendster and WordPress and blogger type space. Whereas now we are a 501c3 nonprofit that works with everybody from individual game players to AAA studios and developers. We still have that core blog content of sharing what we know as people who are mental health professionals and also very deeply embedded in the games community. So we share that with our communities through streaming and articles, conference talks, things like that. But then we're also working on the other side of games directly with developers when it comes to mental health content, content warnings, depictions of mental illness, challenging stigma and stereotypes, and even things like how burnout can negatively impact a studio, the human toll of game production. So pretty much everything at the intersection of games and mental health is where Take This tries to be.
That's amazing. I should say, I know, Liz, we've talked a little bit with you in the past. So Kelly, how did you get involved in this? I want to hear you too, Liz, but I do want to start first with Kelly because we've got a little bit of your background in the past. We have some of your lore already.
Oh, well, I like to think I have an interesting origin story for Take This. So a long, long time ago, about a decade now, I got my doctorate in clinical psychology and basically got blacklisted from psychology because nobody wanted to take on a postdoc who wanted to study games unless you were specifically studying about violence or addiction. Oh. So I could not get anyone to supervise me for my postdoc hours. So just a couple months after I graduated, I actually got into a master's program for game design, as one does, you know, 5-year doctoral program followed by a 2-year master's, totally, totally normal. And so during that time, I'm working on this intersection of game and mental health. Reality is Broken is a brand new book that's out there. And it's kind of an untapped space. So I was doing presentations at PAX about games and mental health in like 2011, like going back a really, really long time. And then around 2014, 2015, this play starts popping up and my panels stop being accepted. And instead, there's this Dr. B person, Dr. Raphael Bokamatsu, who's with this company called Take This. And they've just completely, like, hostily taken over the games and mental health intersection space. And so there was a little, like, you know, fist shaking of like, who are you? This is my space. You're on my turf. What, you know, WTF. And then some time goes by and I end up getting laid off from a job that I had previously, but I had known Dr. B. I had known some of the other people that worked at Take This, including Dr. Sarah Hayes. And it just happened that as I was getting laid off, they were like, hey, so do you have like time to help us out? And it was very part-time. At that point, I was still doing private practice full-time. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so it started with just like 5 hours a week. And then my evil master plan came to fruition because I just made myself invaluable, very much like Hamilton to Washington. I just, I made myself indispensable. And so I was part-time for about a year and then they brought me on in a full-time capacity. And I've worked my way up. I started as community manager and I am currently a community director.
That's wonderful. And so, you know, I kind of want to, I want to dig a little deeper if I can.
Oh, please.
I love just asking questions. So
I'm a psychologist. I'm all about questions and reflection. So please do.
Yep, absolutely. So what was it specifically about games? Because I will say, and as someone who has been involved in gaming his entire life, I was fortunate enough to have a family that did not go through any kind of like, oh, these are wicked things and they'll turn you into a monster. But, you know, I also grew up in Indiana, a state which was a little more on that side of things. So I saw it around. What specifically got you into that part of it? Because like you said, the majority was, okay, you could study psychology and gaming if it's about how it negatively, adversely affects people. So what was it that drew you?
So originally it was just, I mean, I had an older brother and when I was 3 weeks old, my household got a Sega Master System. So games have just always been part of my life. My family are vicious card sharks. Like we have bespoke Dunlap family games that have been passed down through tradition and it can get incredibly hostile.
I did not know this.
Oh yeah. Game night at my place, like the game aggravation, not allowed. It got thrown, the board got thrown out a window once and like, for some reason we never played it again. Shoots and Ladders is a death match. It's great. And so like games have just always been part of it. I played with my brother, but really I got into it in college. I was in a dorm at American University and one of the people who lived next door to me had an Xbox and they were playing Halo. Ah. And I had no idea what was going on. I accidentally stumbled into it. They needed a fourth. I'd never played Xbox before. I'd always been PlayStation 2 before that. And then it got to the point where they would turn the Xbox on and then they would time how long it would take for me to run from my dorm room to theirs. And so basically all through college, we had LAN parties and we were part of the AU Gamers and we crushed George Washington University in a Halo match. And I still am incredibly proud. My best friend at the time, who's currently my husband, I guess I shouldn't say currently, he is my husband. There's no plans.
Listen, I'm
no
not saying that I have, you know, offered to step in, but there have been times.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Liz was my stand-in husband at an anniversary dance at a wedding we were recently
at.
We
did dance together.
Because my spouse wasn't there.
Yeah.
But anyway, we had this massive friend group. We were already wearing like red versus blue t-shirts. You know, I was Doc because purple's my favorite color and I want to be a psychologist and all of this stuff. And like the research at the time was all violent games make you violent. Violent games are bad. And here I am with this amazing group of friends, this amazing support network of amazing, wonderful humans. And we're all playing a first person shooter rated M. And we're having a wonderful time. Like we're forging these friendships to this day. Like most of that squad, one of them lives in England. One of them lives in Minnesota. One of them lives in New Jersey. Like we're all over. And we still get together on Saturdays for our Halo sessions. And so reading the research of like games bad but my lived experience was just so wildly different. Like, but there's something that's not connecting. And what I really realized is that when you looked at the early psychological research, it was very clear that these researchers had never played the games that they were researching. Yeah. They would conflate a first-person shooter with a third-person racing game and say they were equivalent, or they would just lump all things together. They wouldn't actually try to understand the games or how they were made or who was making them or what the point was. It was literally just violence bad. And so, yeah, I started doing my research in that area. And I know the advice I typically give to people who are interested in mental health and game studies is just to be more stubborn and spiteful than the other people around you, because literally that's what it was, is like, I know this is what I want to do. I don't know how I'm going to get there. I don't know how I'm going to do it. And I have so many people telling me, don't do this. You can't do this. This isn't a thing. If you do this, you might as well just throw your doctorate away. Like, no. And yeah, just being more stubborn and pigheaded and determined and resolute. And then having a squad, you know, even if of people who like push you up and raise you up, like Liz. Liz is one of my squad members, and I adore Liz to the ends of the earth and everything. And I'm so lucky to get to work with her on a daily basis. But yeah, that's kind of the origin story of just like, I just knew, like in my gut, I just knew.
Yeah. Well, as someone who's in a squad with Liz, I'll also sing her praises here. So Liz, tell me a little bit about your origin story. How'd you get involved with Take This? I know this story, but our listeners do not.
So I started on the other side.
Yes.
So 2014, a buddy of mine was doing cosplay shoots at PAX, but needed someone to help him out. So he offered me a one-day badge if I would go with him. And during my break, I went down to the convention floor, and it was so overwhelming. I was overstimulated. And I was just like, I need to get out of here. Where can I go? And I saw a sign for this thing called the AFK room. And I went in. It was this nice, quiet room. There was coloring available. And I just sat and I chilled. And I would continue, you know, year after year, I went to PAX. I would go to the AFK room when I was feeling overwhelmed. Eventually, I found what is now called PAX Together Intersections, but then was the Diversity Lounge. And Take This had this thing called the Hope Booth. And this purple-haired man was like, my name is Snuggie. Do you want to sign up to volunteer? And I was like, great.
I think I may have met Snuggie once before. I've been to PAX.
Snuggie is great.
Okay. I'm sure Snuggie wouldn't remember me, but the purple of the name just made me go, okay, wait, yes.
So I signed up to volunteer, and then years went by. And I'm getting ready. It's 2020. And I call Sean. I'm like, buddy, I got my pass. And he's like, I can't go this year. And I was going to be at PAX all by myself. And I was like, oh, no. And then I got this email, do you want to volunteer with Take This? I was like, yes. Like, it gives me a reason to be there. And so I volunteered at the convention. And then 2 weeks later, the world shut down. And I get this email, hey, it's Take This. We're opening a Discord. We're looking for moderators. And I signed up, started moderating. And it was, you know, the world outside was shutting down and this whole new world was opening up on Discord. Mm-hmm. You know, I became friends with these moderators. We developed this whole community. And I was like, this is it. I'm like, this is what I want to do. And I mean, I literally threw myself at Take This. I was like, this is my 5-year plan. In 5 years, I'm going to work for this place. And it was just, what can I do to help? What can I do to help? I spent one summer interning. And at that point, Kelly had taken a leave of absence. And they're like, well, we need someone to help out with the stream. So can you start streaming for us? And I was just like, okay. And then Kelly came back and I was like, well, see you. And she's like, no, you're staying. We're keeping you. And from there, you know, I started working as a Hope Booth coordinator and helping out with things like that. And then one day it was, you know, the person in charge of the AFK program is leaving. they were like, oh, but you have a job. And I was like, but I have time for another one. So yeah, it was really just like, and it was funny because I would tell everyone, it's my 5-year plan. It's my 5-year plan. And in January 2023, I got a message from one of the other moderators. And she's like, Liz, this is your year. I can feel it. And what was it? 4 or 5 months later, it was me on a voice call on a Facebook on or a Discord call with Kelly and Dr. Sarah Hayes, crying tears of joy as I signed my contract with Take This.
There you go.
So,
yeah, it was. I will say, as an outsider, it was wonderful to see that journey for you. I remember. I think we were. It was around the time you did the contract that we were all back at Tim's place.
Yes.
And we all did like a little toast and
we did. Yes. Yeah,
that was a lot of fun. Well, that's wonderful. So I, you know, of course, I know that, you know, having a passion for gaming and of course for mental health in it. But I am kind of curious, so Halo was kind of your entryway, Kelly. What kind of games are you today kind of focusing on? What's really kind of keeping your passion right now?
Halo.
Halo? Yeah.
I still like, hey. You know, I still am my regular player. I'm not as good as I used to be. I used to be, well, almost professional.
Oh yeah,
esports in Halo used to be, but now I have children, and so in terms of what occupies my time is the children. Yes. So my kiddo, my oldest, has discovered that Fortnite has a non-shooting option, and so we're letting him play that. So the Lego Fortnite, there's a racing component, there's a like a Rock Band style thing going on right now that he's really enjoying. So we're letting him do that. He also is very proud because he has, at the age of 7, has already completed like 5 or 6 games, like 100%ed on his own. So a lot of my gaming is in the form of supporting his gaming. Mm-hmm.
He has appeared on Take This Plays, Untitled Goose Game.
Awesome.
Yes, off camera. But yeah, yes, he's... said he wanted to be a naughty goose. And so there was one time everybody was sick. And so it was just me. And so I had him co-commentate Untitled Goose Game with me. And he's very enthusiastic about that. But what I'm most excited about is there's a series of Ace Attorney games that are going to be released soon on Switch. I have played every single Ace Attorney game in its original format, including the Japanese port that came out like 2 years ago. And so I'm excited to bring that to Take This Place, which is our 2 times a month streaming platform, because specifically one of the games I want to play is the one that has Athena. She's the one of the main characters, so it's technically Apollo Justice. Yes. But she has, like, you know, Cyclops and emotional stuff, and so I think it'll be really fun for us to dig into that. Not a lot of new things. I know everybody's into Baldur's Gate. That's not my jam, although I fully support everybody whose jam it is. Like, I want you to have that and spread it on all your toast. Like, you do you. But yeah, so just it's mostly stuff that my kids are into that we can play together.
Yeah.
And that is like the coolest thing ever.
I love that. And I'm so glad that you mentioned Ace Attorney. So that is a game that for whatever reason, Nintendo systems have always had like they're here and then they're not for me in my life. But that is a series that I love every time I've gotten my hands on it. And then what I will most often want to do, like, I love stealing things from other games for my tabletop experiences. And so Ace Attorney, I have a game that I'm workshopping. That is very much like it's a courtroom mystery drama kind of experience in the vein of Ace Attorney. And
is there a talking whale? Please tell me there's a talking whale.
Honestly, in one of my games, there might be, Kelly, if I'm being frank.
Okay, because that's a legit case. The whale was on trial. So
I love if I can do silly all of a sudden that will take them. I had in one of our D&D games recently, they entered a Forgotten Realms Feywild experience, and they encountered a shrew or a mole or a dormouse, I don't remember what it was, named Topsy that was constantly digging for its lost hat. And it, every time it put on a hat, it had a different personality to frighten them mostly. But
and then Liz adopted it and brought it home.
No, that's
a different game.
That is a different
game. And that's where Shade is very indulgent. And I now have a Raku companion named
You always
Lord
have
Fancy
some kind
Pants.
Of.
I do.
You always have Liz some kind is, of vermin.
Yeah, we don't not have a pet for Liz. Liz gets a pet.
He did come in second place in a fishing competition recently. So. Yep.
Well done.
Silly is good in games. Yes. So let's, I want to talk a little bit more about really some of the larger hurdles that you see in gaming here in 2024. Hard to believe that we're already, a month past 2024, really. But before we do that, let's take a moment for our commercials.
Hi, my name is Mike, and I'm from the Old Ways Podcast, here to introduce you to your next favorite show. What is the Old Ways Podcast? It's a weekly tabletop RPG show in actual play format where a group of amazing role players serve up new experiences in homebrew and published scenarios. Well over 500 episodes of beautiful, fully produced actual play content for you to enjoy. Check us out, the Old Ways Podcast. Thanks.
Hey everyone, it's me, Nick, from the Tabletop Podcast. When I'm not hosting, I'm thinking about ways to create a better podcast for you guys, and I think I landed on something pretty fun. In fact, if you go to our Patreon at patreon.com/tabletop and join for as little as $1 a month, you can get access to a new episode a month that we're going to start putting out. In fact, we're going to be calling this one Wild Magic, I think, in that we're going to talk about anything and everything that interests us, not just TTRPGs, though there will be a lot of that. It is truly unhinged, and if you are a fan of the podcast and all of the hosts, you're definitely going to want to be on it. We're thinking of dropping these at the end of each month, so join our Patreon today. That is patreon.com/tabletopped. Oh, and there's going to be so much more coming out in the new year there, so don't miss it. Sign up today.
Welcome back to Tabletopped, everyone. Once again, I am your... usually your, I would say, third most co-host, because I like to go last in the intro, but I am Shade, joined with the wonderful Dr. Kelly Dunlap, clinical psychologist. I almost said clinical physician. I was like, no, don't say physician.
Oh my gosh, you're gonna get sued.
Dr. Kelly Dunlap, clinical psychologist and director, community director of Take This, and our wonderful friend Liz Favorito, AFK manager of Take This, event manager of Take This. And we are talking about Take This, mental health in gaming. And I want to hear a little bit about what you both think and what maybe Take This as a whole thinks are some of the larger hurdles that are facing gaming here in 2024 and beyond. I know that's a big question, a very loaded question.
I know, we both sigh dramatically. I mean, I think the obvious one is always finances. I mean, if you take a look at what is going on in the gaming industry, it seems like every other week we're hearing about this studio laid off 15% of their staff, that studio laid off, 1,000 people.
Are you saying mass layoffs are bad for mental health?
Oh no. I mean, I think, what was it, 6,000 layoffs in 2023?
Mm-hmm. Direct that we know of, and that doesn't include collateral smaller studios as well.
Yeah.
And so it seemed like, especially by the end of 2023, it seemed like nobody was safe. And when you are a nonprofit that is based entirely off of donations, it impacts everything that we do.
Yeah. Well, certainly, the financing, and that seems to be, I think, a trend for many market subsegments, not just gaming, but seems to just be an ongoing trend of slash the budgets, layoff here and there. But it is definitely something that has been very newsworthy in the gaming industry. I for ages, it seems like. It seems like it just continues to get more and more narrow. And do you think, is that in part really, we're seeing that that continuous trend as we see, I mean, I hate to use a buzzword here, but is AI having any part in that? Or is that like something that you're hearing from some of the professionals?
So in part, I mean, game development has pretty much always been volatile. Like if you think back to the, you know, the Atari crash of the early 80s, like if not for Nintendo, video games probably just wouldn't exist anymore. Or it would not have had the trajectory that they have now. And we know from research that we've done that one of the biggest stressors of being in the game industry is not just crunch, but in job instability, because layoffs are a common thing. Reorganizations are a common thing. And there is very much an expand and contract cycle that a lot of studios have, where after a major game ships, it's very, very likely that there's going to be some kind of layoffs as well. So that's, unfortunately, that is largely driven by the fact that making games is, I mean, it's incredibly difficult, but it's also a lot of fun. And so many people want to be, so desperately want to be in the industry that they will work those terrible hours. And it reminds me a lot of when I worked at GameStop as a youngin. You know, everybody wanted to work there, and so they could treat people really badly and pay them really terribly because there was always somebody else. And so whenever you're monetizing some people's passion and their hobby, you're going to have a lot of people who are invested. And so I think as long as that continues to be a thing, just that standard instability is going to be problematic. But then when you look at, you know, what happened recently, there was this massive tech bubble burst of, you know, during the pandemic, everybody bought a console, everybody bought a computer, everybody was and had all the software and had all the battle passes. And there was this massive expansion. And of course, like most bubbles, a lot of tech leadership didn't really care that bubbles always burst, and they were not prepared for the massive recession that has happened. Because guess what? If you bought an Xbox in 2022, you probably don't need one in 2023. And so that kind of staggering of purchases has left a gaping hole, and everybody is kind of free falling, even though you totally could have predicted it.
Yeah.
I would also be really curious to know if this is a cycle that has always happened in the gaming industry, and it's just now that social media is so prevalent that we hear about it so much more now than we did 10, 15, 20 years ago, when everyone was not, you know, on Twitch and Blue Sky and every other social media under the sun.
And it also has to do with the size of the gaming industry. I mean, 10 years ago, if the gaming industry laid off 6,000 people, there wouldn't be anybody left to make games. And so it has to do with just the expansion of the industry itself. And yes, we are definitely hyper more aware of it now. And, you know, 10 years ago, I mean, I think the most recent stats are 2/3 of Americans play video games, and something like 78% of households have a dedicated gaming console, whether it's a console or a PC, like that is what it's for. Yeah. So gaming is more popular than it's ever been. More people are in the industry than there's ever been. And so these upheavals, I think, are, like to Liz's point, are definitely more noticeable. And then Shay, to your comment about AI, I think at this point it reminds me a lot of the whole NFT thing when people were trying to make NFTs work. And I know the game industry was one that was like, absolutely not. Yeah. If for no other reason, if you want an NFT, you obviously have never made a video game and then try to port that game to someplace else and have someone's profile carry over. Cause like it's an absolute nightmare. Yeah. And then we saw them like go really hard on NFTs, and there was just enough resistance that it burned out. I think we're at the gear up stage of AI for that. I know that there recently was something with, I don't remember who it was, but basically striking a deal for voice actors for games can be replaced by AI. And that is not sitting well with a lot of people, given that game development is such a creative, whether it is art or voice, even coding itself, you know, a coder could be replaced by AI. Like it really, really could. And so I think you're going to see a lot of really strong pushback, because ultimately games aren't about production of something like an automobile off of an assembly line. Games are about their human storytelling in an incredibly powerful and artistic way. And if you're removing the human from that, you're gonna have a, there's gonna be pushback, there's gonna be resistance, there's gonna be flops. And so I think right now it's a testing of the waters of what can we get away with without a riot. And I think we're just kind of starting to feel out where that is.
Oddly enough, I think something that's going to be a real benchmark, I don't know if that's the word I'm looking for. If we talk about everyone's least liked owl, the language app that I'm not going to say, just not to make anyone mad.
Full disclosure, Liz, I thought I actually kind of liked the owl in Ocarina of Time. I don't care what you think.
Wow.
So they recently announced that they were laying off the majority of their translators to replace them with AI translators. And I think watching what's going to happen with that might be a good predictor of how other parts of the industry will react to the attempts to replace humans with AI.
Well, that's interesting. I know, you know, one of our favorite things to love, hate, probably more hate on here at Tabletop is
WotC,
Wizards of the Coast. Wonderful industry has provided.
Listen, we love some of the people there.
I was going to let us
say that.
The people are wonderful. And there's no denying they've provided countless hours of enjoyment for so many people. I mean, they're a massive, but they had their own massive layoffs. Hasbro had their own massive layoffs this year. They also have had so many issues with AI, which is part of why I brought that up, just because specifically AI generated art, because if there's one thing WotC does, it's hire artists. Hire them left and right. And I know one of the more recent issues they ran into with their Magic the Gathering series, after promising they will not use any AI, was promoting some human art on a AI generated background, which I guess in fairness, they were assured was human made, but did not take a moment to really verify that. So, you know, I fear, I mean, fear is not the right word. I am always reticent to say fear because I don't want to be a Luddite or anything like that when it comes to tech. But I wonder, perhaps, if, you know, in addition to testing the waters, if it will become an issue of, well, we can't tell the difference now. Like, at what point is that tipping scale, you know? And what is the impact, though, on that from a mental health state? I mean, what are you hearing, I mean, from the individuals in the industry that are, like, are they echoing these concerns, I imagine, or...
So I was at the Family Online Safety Institute last year. It was at this big conference, and they were presenting these massive findings about the use of AI and why people use it and teens and adults and all this other stuff. And what they found was that looking up mental health information was the second most common reason people saw AI as being, is why they would use AI, or they thought that AI would be helpful. Huh. And the conclusion they came to was because AI would allow them to have that it's non-judgmental.
Interesting.
That was their entire thing of, like, people feel more comfortable with AI. And of course, as a psychologist, I probably have some bias. I want to own that real quick.
Sure.
But like the fact that, you know, well, maybe the fact that people want to use AI therapists is because they can't actually get an appointment with a human therapist, or they can't find a therapist who specializes in their needs, or, you know, especially for people of color or who have neurodiversity as part of what they want to talk about, you need a clinician who understands that. And like, well, I can listen to someone talk about their ADHD. I don't have it. And right. So I'm not, you know, not that I can't help people with ADHD, but like, somebody who has that same lived experience is going to have a much richer tapestry to draw from in terms of help. It's also a cost issue. Like, seeing a mental health professional is expensive. And so you see, like, it started with BetterHelp and these online platforms, which have all been incredibly corrupt and like sold user data and treated their clinicians horribly. And so now they're trying to kind of make it so therapy can be delivered through AI. And I actually get a lot of consults like this. And I always try to remind people the number one thing that we know about mental health is that it's the relationship between the person and their therapist that determines outcome.
Yeah.
Not cost, not education, not, you know, anything. It's just how well do you feel seen and heard by the other person? And so if people are feeling more seen and heard and validated by a robot, that speaks volumes about us. It doesn't mean the robot is good. It means that what we're providing people is so subpar that non-humans are able to give better empathy because real humans aren't available. And so I find that to be a major issue and massive ethical issue too, when disclosing personal health information and trauma and all that stuff. It's not secured and it could go on and on and on.
I mean, if you think about, I mean, it's been shown that the, what is it, like the longer you use ChatGPT, the more likely it is that sort of racist, homophobic, transphobic language starts occurring.
Yeah.
Yep.
And, you know, you can't really control for that. I just remember Kelly and myself and some others were at the Games for Change festival last summer. And there, I can see the look on her face. There's a presentation a little like robot companion, you know, and I had literally watched the movie Megan the night before about the human robot doll. And I was just like, oh no, no. You know, I joke about welcoming our robot overlords anytime my Alexa can hear me, but technology is just, I don't know what the word I'm looking for is, but
sometimes it our production of technology outpaces our comprehension of the technology.
Yes.
It was a guess.
My therapist can't be hacked.
Right.
That's all I'm saying.
I mean, I was actually in a consult, and I'll be obtuse about it. But they were trying to develop an app specifically for kids to give them access to mental health services, which is a wonderful idea.
Yeah.
But literally, like, when they were asking clinicians like myself of like, well, how would you feel about having like a replacement therapist? And one person even said like, oh, we'll be able to replace therapists with this app. And it's that kind of thinking that I think is so problematic. It's not even the tech itself. It's this idea of, oh, we have this technology. We can just replace something. And when I was like, excuse me, no, I would take issue with that and I wouldn't support anything that, and they were gobsmacked of like, well, why not? And I told them, I like my job.
Yeah.
I like working with clients. I like working with people. I wouldn't have gone through all of that grad school if I didn't like this. You know what I want AI for? I want AI to schedule. I want AI to bill. I want AI to help me find resources and connections and like, hey, does this person have a waiting list? Because if not, I think they'd be a great fit for you. I want AI to write the lobbying material to make mental health parity actually a thing. It's like the people who have the power to code and create these things completely lose sight of the humanity of it.
Right.
Like you want to replace all of the workers. Well, I would even be fine with that if it meant that I had more time to like play games and hang out. And like if they're like, Kelly, we're going to replace you with AI and we're going to pay you $200,000 a year to replace you. Okay, I'm on board. I'm good.
Bring it on.
Sign me up. But it's not about replacing people with the goal of them having more leisure time. It's about replacing people because it is a capitalistic endeavor to cut costs. And it's so creepy and it's so inhuman. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why a lot of people just balk at it, even if they can't quite put the word to it.
So that, you know, that kind of calls to mind one of what I have to imagine is the other big, big mental health, and correct me if I'm wrong, issues in gaming currently and the games industry. And that is burnout, because pushing, you know, you mentioned there bringing AI so that we have more time to do XYZ, but pushing productivity in the sake of eating into your time to do anything else seems to be an industry standard. Is that, I mean, to my outsider perspective, that is an ongoing issue. Am I correct in that?
Yeah. I mean, like we mentioned earlier, most of the people who are making games are doing it because they're passionate about it.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that you can't be passionate about being a lawyer or that you can't be passionate about working in a restaurant. Like you absolutely can, but then you look at like, the burnout rates of chefs and it puts the games industry to shame. But it's this idea of when you take passion and you leverage it as a cudgel against the people who are using it, and you use it as a way to extract more from them. And then you combine that with a Protestant ethos that if you are not being productive, you are bad, and that your worth is tied to your productivity. You know, those two things combined are just incredibly, incredibly toxic.
Yeah. I mean, that seems no surprises there in my expectation.
If you wanted to learn more about that, if you headed to the takethis.org website, we have a whole content creator burnout series.
Liz, it's like you read my mind, because I was going to say, where do we go from here? How do we fix this? You know what? Take this is obviously dedicated to that. So we have a series. You have a series on takethis.org about burnout.
Yep. You can go to takethis.org/burnout. I designed the website.
Hey.
And we have an entire collection of resources that are specifically tailored to content creators. The vast majority of research available on burnout is targeted at traditional physical employment. Oddly enough, nursing is like the number one focus of research. So what myself and Dr. B have done is kind of take that research and then process it through the lens of gaming and content creation and find out where those overlaps are. So what are the unique challenges that content creators face when it comes to burnout? How, you know, what should they be aware of? How can they kind of schedule themselves and their environments in a way to minimize the risk of burnout, all while emphasizing that burnout is a systemic issue? Like, it comes from the platforms, because ultimately burnout is a mismatch between the work that is required and your ability to do it sustainably, with like sustainably and bold and underlined and like highlighted in hot pink.
Yeah.
So yeah, takethis.org/burnout. The videos are coming soon, actually. We have two new videos that we'll be uploading probably next week. Or by the time this is out, they'll be out. So never mind. I take that back.
What other kinds of tools might one find at takethis.org? I mean, hopefully, you know, if you're listening and you're a lover of games, which I assume you are if you're listening, otherwise, thanks for joining us. or maybe you're in the industry yourself. What kind of tools might they expect? Anything in particular?
Liz? Yeah. Oh, Kelly's giving me the look. So there... on the website itself, there's always blog posts going on. We just published a series on mental health during the holidays. I wrote my very first article. I was very proud of it.
It's so good.
I probably made you read it, Shade.
I did, actually, yeah.
yeah.
But I wanted to do an ooh for the audio.
yes, ooh.
It was very good.
And we have steps on how to find a licensed therapist. We also have a resource, a database of therapists who specialize in using games in therapy. So if that's something that people are very interested in, there's our general mental health resources pages. There's the link to probably the most humble, happy Discord on the planet. Which is the Take This Discord, spearheaded by the one and only Kelly Dunlap.
We're pretty proud down in there.
You know,
yes. Kind, yes.
Yeah, kind yes. And proud, as a gamer should be.
Yes, you're very proud.
We also have some research resources. So we have some expert content that is focused a lot on the work that our research director, Dr. Rachel Cohort, does. And she has a brand new article up there along with Dr. Elizabeth Kilmer in collaboration with the Middlebury Institute, that's looking at like toxicity and games and the overlap between how games can be used by radicalizing actors to like recruit and radicalize youth, and how that tends to overlap a lot in form and format of how child predators groom potential candidates. And so like not the lightest read in the world, but like super interesting. There's also, you know, the state of the industry, where we talk about the mental health of the industry. This was pre-pandemic, so like take that with a grain of salt at this point. But Rachel and our research arm has been doing a lot of work around toxicity and harm reduction and resilience and like making a community more resilient against the possibilities of like extremism and radicalization. So we also have that work on that side as well.
That's wonderful. And I will say from a tabletop perspective, oh boy, does radicalization still exist in that subgenre?
As a femme presenting person who plays tabletop games, mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
It's always fun because as I'm very much a hardcore digital game player, you know, again, I'm very much a straight white woman who was playing professional, almost professional Halo and like Halo 2 era type of stuff. And then I hear, you know, so I was a target of Gamergate and like I've gone through all of this stuff. And then Liz tells me about the stuff going down in tabletop and I'm like, wow, you guys are toxic.
It is wild. It is wild, Kelly.
On you guys. Oh my goodness.
It is thankfully also simultaneously one of the most inclusive and caring and loving like communities you could find. It's weird. It's so weird.
But your drama is unparalleled.
It's massive because it has decades and decades to go off of.
Big feels all around.
Big feels, yes. Well, that's wonderful. I think that you know, as someone who's gone through a little bit in the past and has worked with Liz, known Liz for a long time, and therefore shared in those interests, and you know, been like, what is Liz talking about? I have to say there are a wonderful number of tools there, but I don't want to be the person to be like, oh, you should go look for this specific thing or anything like that, because I'm not the professional, you know, which is why I wanted to make sure that both of you were here with us today. But you know, I will say for anyone listening, even if you think, you know, maybe, hey, well, my table is perfectly wonderful and we don't have any issues, or, you know, I definitely don't have any deep-seated issues myself or anything like that. Just peruse it. You never know. You might learn something that might be a breakthrough for you and your group, and it will be worth your time. And even if, you know, maybe you go through that and you go, hey, great, it looks like we are doing all the great safe things. Cool. Well, it's always evolving and it's always good to check, you know. So as we kind of round towards the corner here and begin to exit these woods of self-reflection, I would love to just hear a little bit about some of the things that you hope to see going forward in the games industry, some changes that you hope might occur in 2024 on a large scale, and then we'll kind of chat a little bit about how folks can get involved.
Sure. So for the broader for 2024, my hopes and dreams, actually earlier in this year in January, I was on a speaker at the Ethical Games Conference, which is the first of its kind. And I gave a 20-minute talk on the importance of content warnings and how to use them appropriately. And I am really excited that is being picked up, because I've been talking about that for a very long time. And typically I just kind of get a pat on the head of like, that's nice. Shh, be quiet now. So not only is it being like, I've now had it accepted to GDC before, I've had it accepted to Games for Change. It's now been featured in the, Ethical Game Design Conference. It actually was published in Games Research and Research and Practice. Yeah, that's what it is. ACM's Games Research and Practice as a kind of a tutorial workshop paper. And I'm super, super proud of it. And it goes along with in December of 2023, a website was launched by Cody Craven, who was the original founder of Can I Play That?, who really kind of pushed the accessibility conversation. And now they have created the game content trigger database, so gamecontenttrigger.com. And they're doing something very similar, but for like psychological and traumatic triggers in games. So I think I'm a contributing member to that. It's all volunteer, like 100% all volunteer. And so, you know, people will suggest games and we go through and we like do a mental health audit and check, you know, is there any potentially traumatic material? And whether that's, you know, one of them is, you know, cruelty to animals.
Yeah.
Or, you know, death, and not just death, but like, is it death of a spouse? Is it death of a child? Is it death of a sibling? Like all these different things that people really have a right to know before they go into a play space, especially if they're assuming that that play space is one where they can relax and have a sense of safety. Nobody wants like surprise trauma. Like that's not okay. That's not good for anyone. And so I'm really hoping that 2024, the push towards accessibility in games continues to be as strong as it is, and we can bring mental health and like psychological accessibility into that conversation. Because again, one of the tough things about mental health challenges is that they're invisible, and that, you know, you can't tell someone's going to have accessibility needs just by looking at them. And while that's not exclusive to psychological accessibility, it is a big part of it. And so I want to see people taking that seriously. I want to move past this idea that, oh, snowflake, suck it up, buttercup type of thing. Like, no, games are something that people love and enjoy and use as their space to decompress and to connect and to feel fulfilled and find happiness and joy in this dumpster fire world that we are currently inhabiting as we spiral around a burning ball of gas. And so like the least we could do is let people know if the dog dies without them having to go and actively research it.
That's
if there's a website for movies, then there can be a website for video games.
Absolutely.
And there is. Saying. We're working on it. Yeah. We're making it happen.
That's wonderful. Liz, anything you're hoping for?
I mean, my goal's a little smaller.
Hey.
But still important.
I was going to say small, but equally important. Yeah.
So, you know, I signed on as the AFK event manager for Take this past year, and something that is not very well known. So we run the AFK program at PAX. We attend all of the PAXes and additional convention. And we run the AFK room, which is designed to be the most boring room in the convention. It's quiet. The lights are low. You know, we have different activities for attendees to work on. And it is staffed by trained volunteers. There's always a licensed clinician in the room. And then our volunteers go through training every single year on how to spot someone who is in crisis, and how to sort of help de-escalate and when to decide if something has to be, you know, sent higher up. We run panels at shows. We actually train all of the enforcers as well. All of the enforcers go through a mental health training with Dr. B. This year it's going to be with Dr. Dunlap. But a little known fact is that we don't get paid for it. Take This actually pays about $15,000 a convention in order to run this program.
Whoa.
And it's difficult. And so my goal this year is sponsorship, you know. Hey, PAX. Hey, everyone, like, this is the work that we've been doing for you. And, you know, the mental health industry, the nonprofits, the gaming industry, we're all struggling right now. And unfortunately, without the support, it's not sustainable for us. So my goal is to get that word out.
So if I were to say, then, if anyone listening would like to support your support, how would they do that?
There's a couple different things that you can do. On the takethis.org website, there is a section to donate. We do have a couple fundraisers going on or going to be happening soon. So right now there is the Solo But Not Alone 4 bundle, which is, I believe there are 93 or 96 contributors, and they are mostly one-person TTRPGs.
Which, yeah, the bundle has 124 games.
Yes. Yeah.
With, I think, somewhere around 90 creators.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And it's on itch.
It's $10. We are going to be featuring a lot of those games on, or some of them, on the Take This Plays and the Take This Org Twitch channel in the coming months. So that's something that you can do, because 100% of the proceeds are going to be donated to take this. In March, we will have Wisdom Save Weekend. It's a weekend of all streamed TTRPGs. I don't know the exact dates.
I thought it was November. I thought it was November, Liz. So like...
No, it's in March now.
Okay, see? This is why Liz is the boss, and I just, yeah. I get to be the talent. Liz is the brand.
Kelly's my intern.
Yes. Ignore the titles, they mean nothing.
So there'll be Wisdom Save Weekend. It's always great fun to watch, because you can, it's like most, you know, TTRPG fundraising streams. You can donate money to affect the game, give people advantage, disadvantage, things like that.
Love it.
I've talked our buddy Tim into participating again.
Yes, indeed.
So
friend of the podcast, Tim.
Yes, friend of the podcast.
My fellow Spelljammer enthusiast.
Yes. Or you can come see us at PAX. We always have a booth at PAX Together Intersections. Also manned by some of our lovely volunteers, with some fun items designed by a clinical director / clinical psychologist / graphic designer / professor, Dr. Kelly Dunlap.
That was close.
Clinical,
No, not psychiatrist.
Oh my god.
Do not put that on me.
Not psychiatrist. Oh, no. I apologize.
Listen, I still don't know the difference, and I work with it.
Script writing, right? Am I right on that?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Psychiatrists can prescribe medication, and in most cases, psychologists cannot. Psychiatrists are not psychologists. They are medical doctors. They have an MD.
Yes. That was my bad.
5 years to learn how to do therapy. Let me run it in. It's a red button topic.
Yes,
on that one.
I do apologize.
Calm myself down.
I should have had it as a sticky note instead of
just right across your forehead.
Now, you know, you said PAX. I just want to can folks, because you of course have a story of getting in to take this through volunteerism. Can people volunteer with you?
Most definitely.
Oh, wow.
So there are two different locations that we have volunteers. You can volunteer in the AFK room. You can volunteer in the Hope booth. If you head to the Take This Twitter account,
okay.
By the time this podcast publishes, the volunteer applications will be open.
Wonderful.
If you want, you can also subscribe to the Take This newsletter, which will announce when they are open, or you can come to our Discord, which is discord.gg/takethisorg, and we'll be announcing volunteer signups there too. And they get it first, just saying.
Yes.
And hey, if you look at the description of this particular episode, you're going to find all those links, folks. We like to make it easy for you. Come on. So that is wonderful. I know that this is going to be really a big year for you all. I'm just positive of it. And I'm going to just a quick thing that all of anyone can do, really. And I do really recommend it, because I know I've said on a few times my personal love for solo TTRPGs. Go spend $10. You got $10. That's not even the cost of lunch anymore. That made me depressed.
There's at least one game in French, and I'm determined to play it on stream.
Ooh.
For the two people out there who will understand what is going on.
Well, I will vaguely understand it, and but there are so many.
Parlez-vous français?
There are so many cool games here. I know I've got a few of these because, you know, often bundles, I had a few of these past experiences and others that I hadn't really experienced.
I know This Old House, which got a lot of hype.
Yep.
Is in there.
Yep.
I think that's one of the group ones we're planning on playing.
Yes. So. And there's also a personal favorite of mine. I went through the Stargate once. We Deal in Lead is something that me and the other crew talk about from time to time, just because who doesn't love a Western? I Shall Not Spare Myself in This Journey is a personal love of mine. and many, many more. So check it out. It's on our Discord right now. I'll also make sure to link that in the episode description, because the fundraising, I think, ends March 10th or March. So. Yeah. So we want to make sure.
March 9th.
I'm sorry.
And it's exciting because they've already raised over $8,000.
That's amazing.
Out of the goal of 20,000, which is fantastic. Yes. And I just want to say, I have not played any of them yet, but the one Roosting with Your Hot Chicken Boyfriend really has my attention. I have no idea what it is, but I would pay $10 to find out. Roosting with Your Hot Chicken Boyfriend.
This is one of the things I love about TTRPGs, which Kelly probably doesn't get to experience much because it's not her jam. Some of the amazing game titles out there.
Honestly.
And there's so many games that are designed to just like, you're going to make out with a hot person. How successful will it be? And you're like, all right.
Yep, absolutely. Ah, the true tabletop experience, honestly.
Yeah. but then, you know, like, make sure that it's, you know, consent tools and everyone set up all their safety and blah, blah, blah. Yep. You know, that's
red light, green light, you know, all that good stuff.
Yep. Lines and veils.
Yellow lights. Well, that's wonderful.
Red light.
Is there anything that we didn't cover that you wish we had today? Because I always want to make sure, because I've really enjoyed speaking with the two of you, but I don't want to take up all of your precious time.
I just want to reiterate what Liz has said is, you know, if you want to be involved, you know, we are a nonprofit. We thrive and we live on volunteers. So if you want to sign up and volunteer at PAX East, you know, that's happening in February. That opens up. And if you're going to PAX West, you know, you can volunteer there, or PAX Unplugged, you can volunteer there. We're in those spaces. And if you're looking for a place just to hang out and read stupid memes look at cute animal pictures, have a question of the day in a mental health affirming space with cool people like Liz and myself, we really do encourage everyone to check out our Discord. Not that anybody needs another Discord in their life, but if you did need another one in your life, this is definitely the one that you would want to have. And yeah, just wanting everyone to be kind to themselves, take care of themselves. I don't know about you, but you know, we're a month into 2024 and I'm already like, okay, get on. Like, you need to slow your roll and like be less of a dumpster fire year. It's just beginning to be February. So yeah, just to take care, to be kind to yourself, to be good to yourself and to the people around you.
And like, if you want to hang out with me and Kelly Moore and the third member of our triumvirate, Dr. Sarah Hayes, we stream on the Take This Org Twitch channel, generally the first and third Monday of the month. We're a little off schedule right now because of Monday holidays. We will have finished playing Road 96, which is one of my all-time favorite games. But we try to choose games that have some sort of mental health aspect to it. You know, Kelly is a game developer. Sarah is also a clinical psychologist.
Mm.
She's a PsyD. She's a PsyD.
Counseling. She's a counseling psychologist.
She does a thing with psychology. I know. And I'm a teacher. So we try to come at the game from all different angles. And it's just a lot of fun. So
wonderful. Well, thank you both so much for joining us today. And thank you, all of our wonderful listeners, for tuning in once more for Tabletopped. I really do encourage you to check out Take This and all of the great things that they do. And hey, after you subscribe to the Take This Discord, if you're looking for another Discord that is a little quieter, but we'd love to get a little noisier, go ahead and check out our Discord. You can check our entire website out at tabletoppedpod.com, where you'll have access to our Discord, access to our episode list, general details, our Patreon. We're starting to put up, in addition to the occasional rare little thing that we may develop, little game aids, things like that. We're doing one Wild Magic episode per month, wherein you know, we just kind of chat about some, not necessarily just tabletop games, but just things in general that we're really enjoying in life. So that's on our Patreon. You can check that out. And we hope to see you again next time. Take care.